News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. We've just learned 9 people have been killed in Fall River, Massachusetts, about 50 miles south of Boston, after a fire broke out in an assisted living facility. Some people yelling out windows for help. Several people were hurt, including 5 firefighters. A famous building destroyed in the Grand Canyon as wildfires moved through there. ABC's Faith Abube.
Firefighters on the ground trying to extinguish the charred remains of buildings. Park officials confirming one of those structures, the Grand Canyon Lodge, a century-old staple, was consumed by the Dragon Bravo fire, which has now burned at least 5,000 acres. 40 miles north, the White Sage fire destroying more than 40,000 acres.
Lightning is believed to be what sparked both of those fires. 2 women shot and killed at a church in Lexington, Kentucky. The gunman later shot and killed by police. President Trump meeting with the NATO Secretary General today, vowing to send more weapons to Ukraine. This is ABC News.
4WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Another juvenile has died as the result of a UTV accident. Thursday morning at approximately 10 o'clock, the Grant County Sheriff's Office was notified of the crash involving a juvenile on private property off of Hurricane Road in South Lancaster Township. The initial investigation determined that the juvenile was the lone occupant in the UTV and was performing farm chores when the juvenile lost control of the UTV, causing it to roll onto its side. The juvenile was not utilizing any safety equipment and was ejected from the UTV and pinned underneath. The juvenile was pronounced dead at the scene by the Grant County Coroner. The Grant County Sheriff's Office was assisted at the scene by the Grant County Coroner's Office, Lancaster EMS, Lancaster Fire Department, and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources will continue to investigate the crash. An investigation by Wisconsin's Elections Commission has concluded that unlawful actions by Madison's former city clerk led to nearly 200 absentee ballots going uncounted in the 2024 presidential election. The report released Wednesday accuses Mary Beth Witzel Bell of violating 5 election laws, including mishandling absentee ballots. Whether she is actually charged with any crimes would be up to the Dane County District Attorney. 2 bags of uncounted ballots were discovered weeks after the election, but the clerk's office delayed notifying officials. Witzel Bell resigned in April. The commission will vote on the report's findings and recommendations on July 17th. The Boscobel Pool Fundraising Committee will host a picnic in the park tonight from 4 to 7 at Cronsage Park in the Gene Larson Shelter. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers sweep the Nationals. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers beat Washington 8-1 to complete a 3-game sweep heading into the All-Star break. But manager Pat Murphy said they weren't playing their best ball.
We weren't on all cylinders by any stretch in the last 3 games, but we had big innings and we did what we had to do. And, you know, there were some unique performances, but it's Major League Baseball. Anytime you can win 3 games, you're lucky in a series. So it wasn't like we walked away with anything.
Right fielder Sal Frelick undergoing an MRI after making a sliding catch in foul territory, suffering a hamstring injury. Last night in the MLB draft, the Brewers selecting 5 new players, 2 infielders, 3 pitchers. The draft continues today. NBA, the Bucks introducing Miles Turner as their new center, picked up in free agency from the Pacers. Turner asked if he's heard from Giannis yet.
Yeah, we texted back just a little bit, you know, but he was on vacation and I was on vacation, so, you know, I know how that goes.
That's the Bucks' Miles Turner with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high right around 87 this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear. We're going to drop into the mid to upper 60s for an overnight low. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny, high in the upper 80s with a few scattered thunderstorms by tomorrow night into Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The Big Brutal Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right. in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll be back from the Northern Wisconsin State Fair and the world headquarters of Madison, taking a look at the weekend headlines and looking ahead to our next road trip with Jane Matinere. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. News from the Center, WRCE.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning, 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Monday morning, July 14th, 2025. Parker Olson producing this show down in Madison Studio A2, and Selena Heller, Up North News reporter, standing by in Eau Claire, Dr. Kristen Lyerly in the Green Bay area, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot will be joining us as well to talk about the forecast for the start of this week. And Brittany, we'll just get right into it because the forecast for yesterday, it didn't matter what the forecast was. You're going to get smoke no matter what up here. It was super heavy. And it was just best not to even try to go outside until later when it dissipated. And we'll talk a bit about that, about some members of Congress writing a letter of complaint to Canada. I mean, talk about a case of old man shakes fist at cloud. But
right.
the larger concern for us here is, while it has certainly dissipated, you know, since its peak yesterday afternoon, are we kind of past that peak? Or I know these things kind of come and go in cycles. What are we looking at from that standpoint as we head into the rest of the weather forecast for today?
Absolutely. So one of the main things, I don't know if you've noticed, it seems like either we get a stormy, hot and humid kind of day, or we get the more comfortable but wildfire smoke hazy days. And that's happening because of a high pressure system. So as the high pressure system moves into the area and we've got a prevailing wind mainly out of the northwest, from the Canada direction, it starts to pull in that air right to Wisconsin. And then the high pressure system actually sinks and calms the air. So it's pulling everything way up high in the atmosphere down to the ground and allowing it to settle. And that's where we are really breathing it in and feeling those effects. So today, yes, we still have a high pressure system covering a majority of the state. A lot of the bad or worse air quality is staying stuck to the east side and far up north, so pretty much by the lakes right now. We are still seeing it kind of wanting to increase to a moderate to unhealthy level still through this afternoon and into this evening, again, especially north and east. So statewide, that wildfire smoke air quality alert is still in effect, and we can expect another sunny but hazy type of day. It will be warm, but it will be dry. Highs will hit the mid-80s all across the state, and it's going to be slightly sticky and humid, especially off to the west and right where this front is draped. We have a stalled front over northwest Wisconsin right now, and it's going to ever so slowly nudge in towards central Wisconsin, more north-central, by this evening. Some showers, maybe a tiny isolated storm could spark from that. Chances are very, very low. That is the chance, and that's kind of that front there. So once that moves through, we'll start to see some better air quality conditions. But for now, especially south of that front, it's not looking too good today.
All right, let's check the mailbag here from Tigerton. Rob says, good morning. It's sunny and hazy and 65. I got my lawn jobs in Wittenberg today, battling the smoke. I had a mowing job Saturday afternoon after getting 0.6 of an inch of rain Friday night. It's the 30th anniversary of the 1995 heat wave that hit Wisconsin from July 12th to 15th. Seven people died there. He says, congratulations, Pat, on your 600th show and letting me be a part of it. It is must-listen radio every weekday morning. He says, today is my sister Debbie's birthday. She is 54 years old. Well, you may not get another birthday now after sharing your sister's age on the radio like that, Rob, but that's okay. Rob also said, as part of Lasagna Awareness Month, he made lasagna yesterday for supper, and he does try to cook there. He said he took a picture of the sunset Saturday with the smoke and haze, and it made Channel 2 in Green Bay. That sunset last night up here through that smoke, I mean, that sun was huge and so red.
Yes.
And gorgeous. To be honest, but
I was going to say that's the only positive of the wildfire smoke. That, I feel
yes, that really is exactly it. Let's see. Alicia says, "Happy 600th episode here." Let's see from Joe in Superior. Oh, we talked about in our last segment the Who as an opening act for Herman's Hermits back in the day. Joe says, my wife from Babbitt, Minnesota, attended the Herman's Hermits Who concert in Duluth as a young girl, and she was shocked when they smashed their guitars. I don't know if the Who was doing that at the Herman Hermits show. Maybe, I guess, you know, that would be a shocking thing coming off of Herman's Hermits. Text from Rosemary in Oliva. What three states is Civic Media now broadcasting from? We mentioned earlier about Civic Media expanding and now has stations in Michigan and Minnesota as well. So the empire just grows. Brittany has so many more places where she's got to do a forecast for.
But I know. But hey, it's nice because Minnesota, we always get their stuff. So it's easy, yeah. Easy.
Yeah, so it's like pre-casting for all of us. You know, you're up to the challenge. Thank you, Brittany. We'll talk to you next hour.
Sounds good.
All right. A reminder, as always, you can subscribe to the Up North News daily newsletter. Head over to our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up in the banner on top of the homepage. You can get our weekday newsletter, and you can get the Sunday morning politics newsletter that I put together. And we have already received a lot of responses to our question of the week, which I have to say I kind of came up with on a lark as I was writing the newsletter. And it's the consternation over the winner of the Democratic mayoral primary in New York City, Zohran Mamdani, and people saying that he is just taking the party too far to the left, like AOC and Bernie Sanders and all those, and that it's going to turn off moderates and it's going to cost Democrats elections. However, there is also a contingent that is so happy to see some Democrats not be so squishy anymore and actually say what you stand for because it is in line with the values of a majority of Americans. So which is it for Democrats? Are they going too far to the left, or is that just right? Or is the party a big tent and it's got room for everybody? So we joke about Democrats in disarray. We have certainly seen Republicans in disarray. We're talking about the Democrats this time in our question of the week. So sign up for our newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com, or send us your thoughts by email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or put something in the comment sections of Facebook or YouTube where you can watch us live doing this little shindig every day. Selena Heller does some of that reporting for us at Up North News, and one of the stories she's been working on lately deals with farmers who have been watching President Trump's trade war with our trading partners, allies, and friends, because why wouldn't you declare war on your friends, right? And the uncertainty that's brought to farmers. Now, Selena, the White House promised 90 trade deals in 90 days with 90 countries. And the correct answer so far is almost one. There's one trade deal that is almost official and not much else. And Selena, you talked to farmers who would certainly like a little bit more certainty when it comes to their ag export markets.
Oh my goodness, yes. And, you know, I talked to them like in the fall too, and it was kind of the same message. It's things need to be stable and not all of this uncertainty and changing and what can we plan for? It's so hard to plan for the future and buying their supplies and, you know, for their fields. And I mean, just everything, they just need some certainty. And there are so many variables in farming, like, you know, the weather. So they'd like, just like something to be something that they can grab a hold of and plan for. So, yes.
And so you talked to, are we hearing just from one Chippewa County farmer in this clip?
A couple of them. Les Danielson is from Cadott, and then we were at the Peck Family Farm, which is just outside of Chippewa Falls, and that is Jeff Peck, and he talks about all of that too. And Tammy Baldwin, Senator Tammy Baldwin, came for a visit to the farm, and they talked to her about kind of all of the problems that they can potentially have with all of this uncertainty.
So here's a little 2-minute clip compilation of the people that she talked to about the uncertainty that Wisconsin farmers continue to face today.
As you disrupt our trade, it's a huge problem. Mm-hmm. You can't emphasize enough.
It takes a long time sometimes to build those relationships, but you can break them pretty quickly. You got to be a good neighbor. You know, it's still business at the end of the day, so we have to have good business deals, but you also got to go about it in the right way.
U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin toured the Peck Family Farm in Chippewa Falls and talked with local producers and farmers about how Trump's trade war is hurting their operations and causing uncertainty.
You know, farm is usually a very narrow margin and sometimes, unfortunately, a negative margin. So anytime you have uncertainty and prices jumping around, that just is an extra challenge that we would prefer not to have.
When you look at Wisconsin, rural, the northern part of Wisconsin, the central part of Wisconsin, a lot of the money that comes into these counties comes from ag commodities, whether it be corn, soybeans, or beef. That's what keeps these small towns in business, like Thorpe, Stanley, Gilman. You know, that's what they survive on, is the farmers doing well. So it's really important that we maintain these trade agreements, that we're able to export our ag products and keep the prices up, because that's what supports rural America.
In the first months of his administration, President Trump launched a trade war with Wisconsin's three largest trading partners, Canada, Mexico, and China, increasing input costs, cutting off export markets, and making it harder for farmers and producers to plan for the future.
The biggest problems we have is we don't know the cost of our inputs, whether it be our fertilizer, our crop protection products like our chemicals. A lot of those come from China. A lot of our fertilizer comes from Canada. Then on the other end of the scale, a lot of our products are exported. 20% of our soybeans last year went to China. 5% of our ethanol goes to Canada. And as we have disruptions with our major buyers, where are we going to sell our product?
The president campaigned on bringing grocery costs down, bringing other costs down. And the policies that he's put forward have been producing just the opposite result.
I didn't think we'd have this many problems with our allies like Canada and Mexico. I'm not surprised some of the other countries, but do we have any friends? You know, is it America first or is it America alone?
And I think that was the perfect way to end this. Is it America first or America alone? And people are seeing that one thing that Donald Trump promised on the campaign trail is turning into something a little bit different here. And now with that recent trade deal deadline passing, we still don't know what's next. Do they extend the deadline? What does this mean? And again, if you're trying to plan, you know, say, what are you going to plant next year, or how many cows are you going to milk, anything like that, there's still nothing new from this White House that helps farmers know what they can expect for a business plan.
Yeah, and of course they knew all of this was, they expected all this to come just exactly as it played out. And like I talked with Les last fall, and it was kind of like I talked to him that day, and he said, and I said, you know, this is exactly what you expected. And he said, yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. But anytime they can kind of try to get the word out how important farms are, no matter who it is, to anybody, any legislator that will come, they will try to tell the importance of farms in a community.
And by the way, it's not just farms. Kristen and I have talked about things like occupations, tourists, medical students. With tourism down, international tourism is down, international education is going to be down, which, and then the limits on loans, Kristen, for student loans, there's absolutely nothing there that indicates anything but a continuing shortage in many areas. Medicine right up there at the top of the list.
It's true, but I want to go back to farmers because we all come from farmers. I mean, Pat, your wife grew up on a dairy farm. My mom grew up on a dairy farm that my uncle still owns. Selena, we are all from farmers. And what do you know about farmers? They're not political. They're incredibly practical, and they will roll with the punches until they just can't roll anymore. And that's what they've done for generations and generations. And they have hit a breaking point right now where our leaders are not supporting them, just lip service. All they're getting is lip service. They need support, because if they don't get support, We don't get food. We have to support our farmers.
Yeah. Selena Heller, Up North News reporter, Dr. Kristen Lyerly here as well. A local update is next for some of you. And then we'll continue along here live from Lake Wissota, from the heart of America's Up North. Thank you for making this the place to spend a part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. 5 years after the fake elector scheme to overturn the 2020 election, legal accountability is grinding along for some of the conspirators and those who wittingly or unwittingly supported them. But pardons may be in the wind, too. May 27th, a three-judge New York appellate court stripped Trump campaign attorney Kenneth Chesbro, an alleged key organizer of the swing state fake elector scheme, of his license to practice law in New York. June 16th, the alleged mastermind of the fake elector scheme, John Eastman, was recommended for disbarment in California. He can still appeal the decision. Also June 16th, a civil jury found MyPillow CEO and election denier Mike Lindell liable for $2.3 million for defaming former Dominion Voting Systems executive Eric Coomer. Dominion itself has a claim pending against Lindell, right-leaning news outlets, and several other Trump-alleged conspirators and collaborators. The Michigan Advance reported July 5th that a hearing on whether the trial of 15 of 16 Michigan fake electors should go forward has been moved to September 9th. A trial in Arizona is scheduled for January 5th, 2026, for the alleged fake electors and Trump associates, including his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Mother Jones reported June 4th that President Donald Trump's pardon attorney was considering pardons for the accused fake electors. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people who voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Hendricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
Alan Omion is our guest. We're going to do a little reminiscing today about farming and the changes over the years and the changes that he has seen in his lifetime. But we appreciate you joining us here, Alan.
And, I'm glad to be here.
Good to have you in here. So your family, the Omion family, it goes back. Are you of Irish descent?
I'm German.
German descent, okay.
That's the knees are Irish. We're not related.
No, we're not, but pretty close, right?
Yeah, I started out a little bit with how my family got here. And I started out with my great-grandfather. His name was Heinrich. When he was over across, when he came over here, he changed it to Henry, of course. But he was born in 1827. And in 1848, he was in the army. 21 years old, and when he was going to breakfast, he seen a thing on the wall where you could sign up to come to America. And so he signed up right there before he went to breakfast. And as the story goes, if it's true, and I'm questioning some of that maybe, but my uncle always said, you don't want to let the truth interfere with a good story. You know? So it's kind of, we'll go from there. But anyway, he signed up. And he come to find out that if he waited till after breakfast, the sign-up sheet was gone. So if he had procrastinated, he would have missed the boat to come to America. So he come over in 1848, and he landed down in... Now, how he got here, I don't know whether he came through the Great Lakes or over land, but he ended up in Lake County, Illinois, north of Chicago, a place called Highwood. And He worked there for a couple of years for a German family, and then he sent for the rest of his family. He made some money, so he had some money so he could bring the rest of his family over, okay? And he did this, and he had two brothers and two sisters and his parents that came over. And I think his brother, maybe one of his older brother maybe was married too. So, but anyway, they came over in 1852, in April of 1852. And that same year, 1852, he bought 80 acres of land for $294 in what is now the city of Lake Forest, north of Chicago. This is a suburb of Chicago on the north side. His father eventually bought 40 acres south of him. So between the two of them, they had 120 acres in Lake, what is now Lake Forest. At that time, Chicago had a population of 38,000 plus. And Waukegan to the north was 2,500. Quite a difference in what they are today. He and his wife, Christina Wacker, were married in 1854. And they had 9 children. His father and his younger brother, Charles, stayed there. His older brother, Johann Christian, moved to Winthrop, Iowa in Buchanan County. And my great-grandfather, Heinrich, moved to Richland County in Marshall Township. The farm that he lives on is now at the end of Ledick Load. I think it's one of the Ledick boys owns it now. And while he was there, my great-grandmother raised 9 children. And things were a lot different then. My great-grandmother never learned to speak English. She rarely went to town, they said 3 or 4 times a year. They were members of the Ash Creek Church, which is south of Richland Center here, because it was a German-speaking church. And so the pastor would come up there once a month and hold services at their home for any other families that wanted to come. So that's kind of the background of my great-grandfather. Hmm. He served in the Civil War. He was a cook on a troop train between Camp Randall and Kentucky for the last year of the war, and then when the war was over, he was mustered out. My grandfather, who was the 5th of 9 children, he worked for several years for a German farmer down by Gotham. And then he worked a couple years with his younger brother, Charlie, in the Dakotas. So this is their growing up period, you see. Then in 1895, he and Charlie bought the William Sherman Farm, which is the farm that we own down on 14 down by Petesnix. It was a 360-acre farm. They bought it for $10,000. Neither one of them at that time were married, but they both got married in 1898, and then they split the farm between them, and they built houses. When they moved there, they were both bachelors, and there was an old cheese factory. The Shermans had made cheese there, and so they lived. The two bachelors lived in there, but once they got married, that wasn't going to work, of course, you know. And so then they built a house, and the house that we brick house down on 14 that we have right now was built in 1903 for $2,200. So these numbers, I mean, they're mind-boggling, really, but... So that's kind of the background of how our family got over here.
Yeah, well, your family farm, you know, still is there on Highway 14. With the two bachelors, was it primarily milk cows, or do you remember how...
There was a barn on there. It was a barn that was 64 feet wide, had 2 driveways down through it, probably about 180 feet long. It was a huge barn.
That would be, for that era.
Yeah. And the stone wall from that barn is still there, some of it. And it had a windmill in the coming out in the center of it. Great, you don't have to pump water. Bad, it gets struck by lightning.
Oh, sure.
And it burned down. So when my grandfather, when my grandfather bought the farm, with his brother, the barn was gone. So whatever has been built for a barn there was built by them. And there had been a house there also. That was gone. So they more or less were buying the bare farm, I guess, for the most part. Maybe there were some other buildings, but there was not a barn and or house for either one.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henricks.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
At this time of the year, we talk a lot about auctions, on-farm auctions, auctions at the county fair. But beginning today, a unique auction giving you an opportunity. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Monday. That's because today through the 21st, the Bureau of Land Management within the U.S. Department of the Interior hosting their online corral auction, giving you a chance to adopt and buy wild horses and donkeys. Jason Luderman from the National Wild Horse and Burro Program says it's your chance to give these animals not only a good home, but potentially find yourself a good work partner. He says donkeys, for example, can do many different things.
So a lot of people use them as guard animals. Burros make great guard animals. They'll run off coyotes or other predators that might threaten your herd. A lot of people just keep them as pets. I mean, you take one look at one of those burros and you'll see why. They're very cute animals, and a lot of people have them around as pets or livestock guardians. Some people take them on the trails as well. They can be used as pack animals. Basically anything you want a donkey to do, that's what this burro is for.
Jason Luderman with the National Wild Horse and Burro Program. He says they do this auction about every 4 to 5 years to make sure that the animal numbers in rangeland in the West aren't becoming overcrowded and that the animals stay healthy. If you're interested in getting involved, again, the online sale from now through the 21st, and the pre-application process takes less than a business day to complete. We've got a link up on our website now, MidwestFarmReport.com.
Hey, got yield? The Wisconsin Soybean Association is excited to announce the 2025 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest, highlighting the innovative production practices of Wisconsin soybean growers. The Yield Contest celebrates soybean growers across the state and their dedication to improving their operations. Two winners will be selected from four geographical divisions, with additional awards available. Entry forms must be postmarked by August 31st, so don't wait. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and, of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
There's a quick update for you on food and farming news for a Monday. Remember, our talk text line is open to you anytime. Communicate directly with us by calling or texting 877-301-FARM. I'm Pam Yonke.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high right around 87 this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear. We're going to drop into the mid to upper 60s for an overnight low. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny, high in the upper 80s with a few scattered thunderstorms by tomorrow night into Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 63.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people who voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
Maggie Dawn.
Matt Rothschild is in the guest host seat with me on Monday. We keep you up to date. Who's out and who's in? Is it Bongino and Patel or Bondi at the DOJ?
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
.35 back here on the Civic Media Radio Network, or perhaps you're listening later on as a podcast or watching us later on Facebook or YouTube. Well, a reminder, if you're not one of those people potting us, you can head over to Spotify and sign up to follow our show as a podcast. You can do it at Apple as well, or any of those other places where you get your favorite podcasts. And I know that there's at least one new subscriber on Spotify, because in visiting my mom yesterday, Kristen and Parker,
Patrick,
one of my sisters set her up on her iPad with Spotify, so that she could listen to her music, meaning the 50s and 60s, you know.
There you go.
And so I said, oh, let me see that. Looked at her Spotify, clicked a couple of buttons, and said, congratulations, you're my newest subscriber.
Thanks. Padding your stats. I like it.
Yep. Hey, I will come to your house too and do the same thing if you like. Just let me know.
Probably like that, Pat. Yep. He's on the radio again.
Well, she normally listens over, you know, like Facebook instead or something, but now she's got a new way to do it. So good for you, Mom. Good job.
Hi, Mom.
letting your son borrow that iPad for just a moment here. I mentioned a minute ago that there were members of Congress, including two from Wisconsin, who felt the need to send a letter to Canada. That would include, it was Tom Tiffany and Glenn Grothman, who joined with some other members of Congress from Minnesota, sending a letter to complain about wildfire smoke. And they blamed, quote, the lack of active forest management for the spread of the wildfires. And the letter goes on to say, our constituents have been limited in their ability to go outside and safely breathe due to the dangerous air quality the wildfire smoke has created. In our neck of the woods, summer months are the best time of the year to spend time outdoors, recreating, enjoying time with family, and creating new memories. But this wildfire smoke makes it difficult to do all these things. I might have added some dramatic flair to that, but how do you suppose that letter was received by the Canadian Forest Service, Kristen?
Embarrassing.
It is. It's embarrassing. And it sparked a robust response from the Premier of Manitoba, who accused the members of Congress of trivializing the efforts to battle the fires. And he writes, this is what turns people off politics. When you've got a group of Congress people trying to trivialize and make hay out of a wildfire season where we've lost lives in our province. I have shaken the hands of American firefighters in northern Manitoba who are helping us out, and I would challenge these ambulance chasers in the U.S. Congress to go and do the same, and to hear how much the American firefighting heroes who are here love our province. I mean, it really was about the least neighborly thing you could expect Tiffany and Grothman and the others to do.
First of all, if you have a breathing disability or disorder, please take care of yourself. The air quality is not good. So seek shelter, wear a mask, stay in your house where you have filtered air. This will pass. Second of all, oh, Canada, I'm so sorry. Did you see the ad that the Quebec tourism folks put out about America?
No.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a fella who's checking into a Quebec hotel, and she asks, where are you from? And he says, I'm an American. And she goes, and she hits a button under her desk, and the desk opens, and she walks out and just gives him a hug. And it says, Americans, you are welcome. Please come and visit us here in Quebec. And it is so beautiful because they know, they understand. Every Canadian that I've talked to understands that this is not how Americans are, but it's how our leaders are acting. And it is just, it's embarrassing and it's so, so wrong.
Yes, it is. Our leaders and just enough Americans, and many of them were at the Turning Point conference over the weekend to, again, put on a display worthy of our apologies to Canada and others. Congressman Tiffany put up on Twitter, another weekend of Canadian wildfire smoke and air quality warnings across Wisconsin and Minnesota. With today's modern tools to prevent wildfires, this shouldn't keep happening. By today's modern tools, I think we know what Tom Tiffany means by that. You know, Captain Clearcut, Captain Extraction, who probably believes that the next step for Canada should be a series of strip mines. Because after all, you can't have forest fires if there are only holes in the ground where the forest used to be, right? Pretty smart guy.
It's so hard to believe that this is a fella who represents a part of the country that depends on forestry as a primary industry. It is either the first or second most important economic driver in the state of Wisconsin. So Tom Tiffany should be smarter. Turn to the foresters and learn what this means. Yes, there is responsible forestry management, but that doesn't mean clear cutting. That doesn't mean that all the underbrush needs to go away. That seems neat if you are somebody who lives in a suburban area and wants to clean up your yard, but that's not how forests work. So maybe Tom Tiffany needs a little education. I suspect quite a few of our congresspeople do.
Well, that their education is just, you know, what does industry want? And let's just give that to them and that will take care of our problems. No, it will create a whole new series. And you know, we don't need to talk about what they want to do to groundwater. Let's just be concerned about what they want to do to our forests to get to the groundwater.
Yes, and industry, actually, much of the forestry industry is into conservation. They work hand in hand with conservation efforts, with the DNR, because they recognize that they have to have sustainable forests if they're going to have a future in the industry. So don't be fooled. They are not actually even representing forestry as a profession and as an economic driver in the state.
Yeah. Hey, EAA Air Venture starts a week from today down in Oshkosh. Woo! Is that, I have not attended. Have you?
Once?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really an airplane person, but it is a huge deal.
It is a very huge deal. And I was looking at the Oshkosh Northwestern here, and they've already got a preview for the 72nd edition. Justin Marville put it together for the Northwestern, said that two Goodyear blimps are set to make their return to Air Venture. All the air shows will begin coming up next Monday as well. Let's see, there will be 700.
Wait, look at Parker's face. Parker's like having a moment right now.
Yeah. Did you say there's going to be two blimps there?
I said two Goodyear blimps, marking Goodyear's centennial anniversary of flying airships.
Aren't there like seven blimps in the world?
That's how blimp-worthy this event is.
It's blimp-worthy.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yes.
That's wild.
It's described in his article as essentially flights Disney World, with the pomp and spectacle of the aeronautics industry from flying cars to fighter jets and flight simulations.
It's really cool. Even if you're not into planes like me, it's still really cool.
Yeah, there will be 860 exhibitors, 98 countries represented at least, and like I said, about 700,000 visitors. And, you know, I should let this go at this point because you know who's going to really want to talk about it in less than 30 minutes is going to be Brittany Merlot, who literally camps there, you know, when she can. So,
she's an EAA fangirl.
Yes. Alicia writes on YouTube, I got to find the photos from my first EAA air venture. And she also says, I think we need to sit these members of Congress down to watch the Lorax talking about, you know, what's happening with the forests in Canada and everything else.
I think they could understand it on that level.
Whatever it takes, frankly, at this point to try to get some kind of a message through to them. Over the weekend, again, you were traveling and just got back, so I'm guessing you have not seen the new Superman movie that came out over the weekend here.
No. Tell me more.
Well, just looking at the weekend box office here, and it says that in a bid to kick off a new era for DC Studios, James Gunn's Superman opened with $122 million in U.S. and Canadian ticket sales over the weekend. The roughly on-target opening was the third largest of the year so far, and the first of the DC Comics to surpass $100 million in its opening since Wonder Woman back in 2017. But here's the thing. Ticket sales were relatively soft for Superman overseas. In 78 international markets, it grossed only $95 million, including in China, just $6 million in sales. Because, of course, it is a quintessential American character. And America's image, taking a bit of a beating here because of our own little Lex Luthor in the White House right now.
Oh, I like that analogy.
I did there, huh? Uh-huh. So you had Superman at $122 million, Jurassic World Rebirth at $40 million, F1 the movie at $13 million, How to Train Your Dragon raised $8 million, and Elio at $4 million over the weekend. Thought about that yesterday, that you could go to a nice air-conditioned theater, not have to worry about the wildfire smoke, and go see a movie. Would have had to get off my butt to do it, and there was just too much to get done around the house. And it actually was nice. I mean, it's one thing if it's like a rainy, stormy day, or there's a blizzard, or it's really cold, and you go, all right, this is a day for getting stuff done around the house. Yesterday, instead, it was like, well, it looks really bad out there. It's sunny, it's breezy, but that smoke, I mean, you'd step outside for a second, and you'd swear it was like somebody put a whole bunch of campfires in the lot next door. And we said, nope, let's just get things done around the house. And it's amazing how many little things that you've neglected around the house you can get to when the circumstances warrant it, you know? Mm-hmm.
And you're given permission to stay in the house. Like, probably not a great idea to be outside, as much as in the summer, I want to be outside all the time. But on days like this, I think I might actually be able to empty my inbox today.
One more note about the weekend marked the 40th anniversary of Live Aid. And I have not asked you if Live Aid was something that you tuned into. Were you a part of? It seemed like this global phenomenon at the time, and I'll share my story in a minute, but do you have a Live Aid story?
Oh, it's not a story. I was just glued to the TV set because I loved all of that. That actually might be part of the reason that I do all of the philanthropic work that I do, because of what they did and why they did it. And those were all my heroes who were doing it. So they were modeling it for me.
They were. I mean, again, it was extremely altruistic. You're feeding hungry people in another part of the world. And you're doing it through two different concerts on two different continents, including, who was it? Was it Phil Collins that played both Wembley Stadium and was in Philadelphia?
Oh, yeah. Didn't he get on the Concorde?
Yeah, on the Concorde.
Yes.
You know, and it was just amazing. And my story is I was living, you know, going to UW-Eau Claire at the time, taking summer classes and living just off Water Street, which was not particularly a good thing to do if you were going to be studying over the summer. But somehow I managed to make that happen. And so my housemates and I, there were six of us living in the house, and we decided we were going to tape the whole thing. on cassette tapes. And that way we were going to have, I mean, talk about a box set. We were going to have cassettes with the entire concert. And it was funny to watch us like hour after hour, like whose turn is it to replace the, oh wait, do we not have a tape? Well, we'll tape over this one. Yeah. We don't need this Huey Lewis in the news. We can buy a new one of those. We got to tape Live Aid. And it probably lasted 6 hours tops before we all just like, forget it. Okay, let's just enjoy. Plus, it was a nice day outside, so we would kind of come in and out. So we weren't glued the entire time, but it was an event. I mean, especially for people your age, my age, we were glued. We wanted to watch that, and like you said, it just made us feel better. Like there is a difference to be made out there in the world.
And fortunately now there's YouTube, so we can watch great things like Freddie Mercury and Queen and Radio Gaga. Amazing.
We don't need my cassette tape player. Exactly. A local update is next for some of you. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In a chaotic and somewhat discombobulating end to the process, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a state budget and Governor Tony Evers signed it into law at about 1:30 a.m. on July 3rd. What made this budget different from the others signed in this era of divided government is that Democratic votes were needed to pass the budget in the state Senate. Part of the reason that was made possible is because of new, fairer maps. Last November, Senate Democrats flipped four seats, shrinking the Republican majority to just an 18-15 margin. Now, candidates are already lining up to take this the rest of the way and flip the chamber. Democrat Jenna Jacobson, who currently serves in the Assembly, is now running for Senate, challenging Republican Howard Markline in the 17th District. If Democrats can flip that district and one more seat, they could control the state Senate for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be a big deal for state politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. 5 years after the fake elector scheme to overturn the 2020 election, legal accountability is grinding along for some of the conspirators and those who wittingly or unwittingly supported them. But pardons may be in the wind, too. May 27th, a three-judge New York appellate court stripped Trump campaign attorney Kenneth Chesbro, an alleged key organizer of the swing state fake elector scheme, of his license to practice law in New York. June 16th, the alleged mastermind of the fake elector scheme, John Eastman, was recommended for disbarment in California. He can still appeal the decision. Also June 16th, a civil jury found MyPillow CEO and election denier Mike Lindell liable for $2.3 million for defaming former Dominion Voting Systems executive Eric Coomer. Dominion itself has a claim pending against Lindell, right-leaning news outlets, and several other Trump-alleged conspirators and collaborators. The Michigan Advance reported July 5th that a hearing on whether the trial of 15 of 16 Michigan fake electors should go forward has been moved to September 9th. A trial in Arizona is scheduled for January 5th, 2026, for the alleged fake electors and Trump associates, including his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Mother Jones reported June 4th that President Donald Trump's pardon attorney was considering pardons for the accused fake electors. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The Big Beautiful Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Henricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
Alan Umbeyond reminiscing with us today about his family, a family farm, and some great history as we go back to agriculture's past. Alan, you remember your first tractor?
F-20.
Oh, sure.
McCormick.
Farmall, yeah.
Farmall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then my dad, just before he died, bought an M. And then we bought an MTA, which had a torque amplifier, which meant that you could pull a lever, and it would slow the tractor down one gear.
Yeah.
And it had live power. I mean, the PTO shaft, we pushed the clutch in, the PTO shaft still continued to run.
That was a big tractor in that era.
Well,
too.
Yeah. Oh, heavens, yes.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you about my, it's Art Cockcroft, who worked for my dad. He drove horses. And so when we finally decided that we were going to get rid of the horses, why, they decided he was going to, Art, we're going to teach you how to drive a tractor. And so they got Art on that tractor, and they got him going forward. Okay, now stop it, you know. I mean, push on the clutch or whatever you got to do, you know, to stop a tractor. And he went, whoa. He got off the tractor and never got it back on. He went, he left the farm. He went and worked for a guy that had horses.
Oh, okay. Huh? Saying whoa didn't work on the tractor. Yeah.
Do you ever hear of checking corn?
Oh, sure.
You have. You're mm-hmm. old enough.
Well, I remember talking about it. I never did it, but
I never did either.
Yeah.
But back then they didn't have any. The only way they had to control grass or weeds was cultivation.
Right.
And so they had a wire on a spool.
Yep.
That they drove a stake in the ground on one end of the field, went to the other end, and every time they got up to the end of the field, they had to get off and move the wire. And that what that meant was that they could check the corn, they could cultivate it either way. But otherwise, if you just didn't, you know. And so that worked, very labor intensive. Then we went to, I remember, what they called a power hill drop, which every 40 inches, probably you'd drop three seeds in the ground. The rows are 40 inches wide. Why were they 40 inches wide, Phil?
Well, for the cultivator, I suppose, right? The tractor?
No.
No?
For the horses.
Oh, for horses. I never thought of that.
Horses had to get down between the rows.
Oh, okay.
Now, once they didn't use horses, now they shorten the rows back up to about 30 inches, and some do even 20 inches.
Right.
But it was for the horse. You had to get the horse down that row, you see.
Sure. Never thought about that.
Well,
but
that's why you're here. I'm here today to educate you.
You're educating us.
We started out with a two-row planter and a four-row planter. Now we've used a six-row planter. Weeds. At one time, we had control of weeds, control of grass. We had, first thing we had was 2,4-D. That would take care of a broadleaf, but never wouldn't affect quackgrass. And of course, quackgrass is a rough one, really. Then along came atrazine, and then along came Roundup. And then they had what we call today Roundup Ready seed that you can buy. So if you can buy seed corn, alfalfa seed, it's Roundup Ready. It means when that plant is growing, you can spray it with Roundup and it'll kill the weeds, it'll kill the quack, but it won't affect the plant. That's where we're at on that. Harvesting corn by hand, of course. Then we had a one-row corn picker, and eventually we had a four-row combine. Now today we have a six-row combine. So that's all affected now, all that.
Some of the combines are a lot bigger than six rows now.
Oh, yeah. And we have a six-row planter, but there are 12-row planters operating right in Richland County here.
Mm-hmm.
12 rows. Well, some of them are right in the field right next to us, you know. We're kind of insignificant when Matt gets out there with his rope. Yeah.
Well, making hay, is that's certainly changed, too.
Making hay is another thing.
Now, you probably did it when it was loose hay, Robbie, right? You know,
I went back to loose hay.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I have I have memories of loose hay. When in the 40s, before we had a baler, we made hay loose hay. And we would load it onto a flat wagon with a hay loader. People may not know what a hay loader is, but it's a machine that picks the hay up after you bowed it and windrowed it, picks it up and brings it on up and kind of at an angle, and it drops it on top onto the wagon. So you got a guy in the wagon who has to load that load of hay, by loose hay, all by hand with a pitchfork. My memory of it is being the guy that's driving the tractor down the row to do this. And driving the tractor down the row is no big problem. What happens when you come to a corner and you're going to have to turn around, you're going to have to go and get out far enough so that when that hay loader, which is about 30 feet behind you, comes around that corner, it's on the hay. And I never quite got that right. I can remember. So then what do you have to do? The guy on the wagon will tell you, well, you're going to have to, we'll have to make a loop around, come around, and we're going to have to take another quack at it, you know. So I remember that for some reason or other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to dump the wagon off in the ditch or anything like that.
Well, you don't want to do any of that stuff, no. Then we got a baler, eventually, and baled hay, square bales, small squares. And today, of course, you can chop the hay. A lot of hay is chopped and put into bunkers, or used to be in silos. That's another story on silos and the difference between that. Round bales, and now we have round bales, big round bales. That's mainly what we harvest our hay with today.
Yeah, less labor intensive. I mean, used to take quite a bit of labor to put up 8,000 or 10,000 small bales. You know, nobody really does that many anymore, it doesn't seem like.
I mean, you'd mow down 10 acres of hay, you had a big day's work in order to get those baled and get them into the barn. However, you had grapple forks, you have elevators.
all these different ways of moving them into the barn. Our barn, and when we had Luce, I have to go tell you this a little bit. When you get to the barn with that load of Luce after we got on the wagon, then my father was on the wagon, but they had a hay fork, or I can't explain it on the radio, but they used to pull it up in the barn.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henricks.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Hours after flames swept through an assisted living center in Fall River, Massachusetts, south of Boston, we have learned that 9 people were killed in that fire. 5 firefighters also hospitalized. They have non-life-threatening injuries. Heavy rains in Texas Hill Country hampering search efforts for the more than 160 people still listed as missing after the July 4th flooding. ABC's Maria Villarreal is in Kerrville, Texas.
The area where I'm standing right now, along the banks of the Guadalupe River, this was submerged completely by flood waters just 10 days ago. But this morning, there is lightning, thunder, and rain all around us, meaning those recovery efforts could slow down once again here in Texas.
President Trump meeting today with the head of NATO to talk about resuming weapons shipments to Ukraine. The president sending letters to Mexico and the European Union over the weekend saying 30% tariffs will kick in August 1st, but discussions continue trying to work out deals with both trading partners before the deadline. This is ABC.